was Salif Keita with Africa, which felt like the correct song to start our conversation with this morning, because we're speaking to a man who has made it their business to reframe the African continent, show off the African brand, and has also now been recognized for their immense contribution in their career over 30 years of doing this work. Our profile guest this morning, marketing and branding expert, founder of Brand Leadership Group, Dr. Thebe Ikalefeng. Dr. Ikalefeng, a very good morning to you. Welcome to Weekend Breakfast.
Brooks, thank you so much, and good morning from Ethiopia.
I was about to ask, where are you? Because you're always you're part time in South Africa, part time in the rest of the world. Okay, so Ethiopia.
I'm in Addis. What an incredible city! You know, last night I saw, because you know they've got the new Bank of Ethiopia, the Commercial Bank of Ethiopia's building, which is I think the tallest building now in the continent or something.
Oh, really? Taller than the one in Sandton?
I think it is.
Oh.
Well, it's certainly up there, because I know they were building the tallest building. But at night, I couldn't believe how incredible it was at night to look at this place. I mean,
yeah.
Wow.
I'm assuming you've been to Addis before. This isn't your first visit.
No, I've been to Addis countless times. I don't know. I've lost count. I've been to others, but the city, the transformation of the city is really inspiring, what they've done with the city. I mean, they've got a whole financial district, they've got a whole tourism, they've got so much happening. It's dizzying how incredible Addis has become. Remember, this is an economy which is generally closed, and now they're opening up, they are exploding.
And so do you have a favorite African city? I know that's a very difficult question, but is there a city that you know, every time you go to it, you think, yep, this is the one, this is my favorite?
I think different cities evoke different emotions, and also the time of the time you're in the city evokes a different emotion. If you look at from Ethiopia, which probably will rank more from a spiritual level, if you will, if you come around here, January 6, 7, that's in Lalibela particularly. Or you come towards the end of January and you go to Timkat, which is in Gondo. That time of the year is probably the most spiritually deep part of this country, because it's the Epiphany and it is New Year, Christmas and Epiphany.
Yeah. And so how does your love affair with the continent start? Because I guess even what you studied wasn't, because I would have thought someone with this, I guess, deep love and I guess even a commitment to the province, to the continent, might have done, you know, political science and international relations, but actually that's not what you studied at all. So how does this love?
I ran away from anything that's got the word political next to it.
Really?
But I think it's still consistent because, you know, I obviously have my first two degrees were in marketing related strategy, and my jobs since then and now has still been around the area of building brands or shaping narratives. So it is related in the way, because it is about shaping narratives. It is about creating an image and it's about creating value. And so if you look at over the years, everything that I've done anyway, whether it's building a brand called Colgate, where I started in New York, or whether it's coming to where I finished corporate, it was just Nike, whether it's building a sneaker brand, it's about shaping a narrative for a brand, or whether it's the work I've done with countries, whether it's in Ghana, whether it's in Congo, whether it's wherever it is, other countries I've been to, it's all about shaping narratives.
Yeah.
So it's very related. There's many ways to build this continent, and we can't all be politicians or political scientists. Many of us can contribute towards a continent from an entrepreneurship, from an education perspective, and yes, from a political narrative as well.
You speak quite a lot about, you know, shaping narratives, whether you are doing it for countries or corporate brands. And as a marketer and someone who's done this work, are elections quite a fun time for you? Because we watch in real time attempts, some of them successful, some of them not, by political parties to shape narratives, to say, you know, this is who we are, this is what we're promising you, and vote for us. Do you find it to be quite an interesting time as a marketer, because it's arguably, you know, election season is, you know, like the marketing Super Bowl or the marketing AFCON. let me use an African example. It's the marketing AFCON.
Well, I've been fortunately, I've been involved in elections across the continent since 2007, 2008. So from around that time, I already worked with some interesting parties. Some of them were completely out of the running, and we ended up winning the elections, and others were merely, I guess, a confirmation. So elections are always interesting because elections are, because what are they doing? They're all creating narratives about what they do differently and better for the citizens who are the customers, customers of their vision and customers of their development programs. So it's always interesting. Of course, the disappointment with elections at all times, when people always ask me about elections, what's my one regret or my one thing about them, I always say my irritation with elections is just that, you know, we campaign, we campaign in prose and govern in water, kind of where the phrase goes. But we make such lofty promises, and some of them are so improbable. And then when it comes to running the actual governments and all those, we fall very short most of the time. It's to have a country which I guess campaigns on something, you know, like if you look at Rwanda, for example, 30 years ago, exactly to the day, it's similar to South Africa, we're at different points in time. So for Rwanda at that time, 1 million people were killed in 100 days on the basis of race. And from a South African perspective, South Africa was emerging from a pariah to a new democratic state. But how we've traveled different directions is incredible. But you see now the power of when a leader, for example, Paul Kagame in this instance, has got a clear vision for their country. And you can see the manifestation and the actual experience of that vision on the ground. Rwanda now probably one of the most admired countries in the world, you know, has positioned itself firmly as the technical and as the capital of every consequential African decisions. Whereas South Africa now, we are back to a rebuilding stage because what we've done with the mandate that we've been given as a country has been short of, has not been ideal, if you will.
Yeah, but also at the same time, so there is this, I guess, this rebuilding, right? But also at the same time, there's almost this explosion or evidence of the things that we can do. You know, culturally, our impact on music right now is really exciting. You know, the world is obsessed with, you know, how we sing, how we dance, you know, how we do our art. Sporting, you see us, you know, shine there as well, whether it is women's soccer or rugby or, you know. And so it's almost interesting that one brand can have these two stories of it's one, incredible, as you say, rebuilding and, you know, and in some instances just crawling, but in other ways at the same time just flying. You know, you watch Tyler on a stage win her very first award, and it's a Grammy.
The duality of South Africa, of brand South Africa, is actually incredible. In that, if you wanna look at South Africa from a political lens, you probably have a lot of concerns, a lot of challenges, a lot of worries, a lot of disappointments, and all those. But if you wanna look at South Africa from a citizenry, you will be incredibly inspired. Because whether it is about building the best, if you look at the out of the top 100 banks in the continent, South Africa will dominate them at probably 50% or so, more than 50%. If you look at the most admired brands in the continent, which I do every year for the last 15 years, South Africa dominates in this space. You look at the arts and culture, whether it's Esther Mahlangu, whether it's Trevor Noah, whether it is Tyler, like you said, whether it's Black Coffee, we dominate. So the duality of South Africa is actually mind-blowing. But then it demonstrates that the citizens have the power to create a better future for themselves. Because the politician's job is quite simple. It's just to create an enabling environment and to support those who cannot support themselves. But if you leave it all to us, chances are we probably can do a better job as citizens of creating a better life for ourselves.
Yeah.
I stand to be corrected and to be chastised for that statement.
Yeah. But also, does it always, I mean, I look at America and they are probably one of the best branded countries. They invest in their brand. That even so much so that, you know, citizens believe in their brand. Americans drive their cars, their Fords, their, you know, some of the brands I don't even know, and they're arguably not the best cars. But Americans love America. They watch their TV channels. They eat their food. They drink their drinks. They drive their cars. And as much as the country brands to the world, it also brands to its citizens. Even if necessarily there isn't a real, like a tangible product under that brand. The average American dies with $66,000 in debt, owning nothing. One of the main reasons Americans go into debt is, you know, medical debt because healthcare is so expensive, et cetera, et cetera. But
and
still,
education and
homes. Yeah, but still, the brand is strong. And so,
well, I mean,
is it possible to have a brand and the product isn't necessarily great?
Well, I mean, I guess it's a further example of what I've just said. That despite the politics of America, if you will, despite, I mean, which country will be proud to have a Donald Trump, for example, as a president, or a 81-year-old Biden as your best candidate if you're a Democrat? So American politics and or to be supportive of what we're seeing they're doing in the past couple of days, over the last 3 months, last 100 days in the Palestinian or the Hamas versus Israel situation. So I guess in that space you can question the politics and the political decisions of America. But when it comes to supporting their citizenry, particularly in the area of entrepreneurship, you'll be inspired by what they do. For example, if you look at Samsung, the fight that Samsung has had with Apple for over the years, whenever those cases are handled in America, Apple wins. Whenever the cases of Samsung are handled in Korea, so South Korea, Samsung win. Because the one thing that they've done is really to champion entrepreneurship as a core part of the identity of America. And in that space, they will defend, they will support the corporates which are made in America. So made in America has always been about entrepreneurship more than anything else, or supporting enterprise. So of course, all countries do have multiple personalities, but the dominant personality of America, the dual personality, are perhaps the military, because I think America is the only country which has got presence in almost all African countries, mm-hmm. militarily and also commercially, compared to China, which has got more commercial and interest in Africa than military interest in America, in Africa. But when it comes to defending the interests of the citizens, Americans will go defend, will go try and ensure that if somebody is arrested in Russia, they will fight to get them out of there. They will fight. So in terms of that area, that part of the American brand, I mean, you can be inspired by that. I mean, I studied in a country and I probably will never live in that country. I mean, that's just, you know, one should never say never. But having lived there, and I always say to myself, there's no country like South Africa.
Yeah.
There's no country, continent like the continent. I'd rather be here than anywhere else, of course. Yeah, I mean, countries can have that duality. Italy is another good example, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is another good example of how the politics have been rotten for so many years, but the citizens kept going. Italy never lost its international branding as that that country with incredible food and incredible design. So countries can exist with the multiple duality, and I think it's fine. They're also a demonstration, an example that we shouldn't put all our fortunes in political hands. We should put all our fortunes in ourselves. I think it's what JFK once said, ask not what the country can do for you, but ask what you can do for the country. But I think ask what you can do for yourself, because when you do for yourself, you're contributing to the greater country narrative as well.
Mm. My daughter on WhatsApp says, congratulations to Dr. Ikalafeng. You have and still remain a true inspiration to me and the rest of the continent. It's a true wonder that you have traveled all of the African continent. You've traveled to all countries on the continent?
I've got to every single African Union country, which is 54.
Oh, wow.
I've got to, which is 50, not United Nations country in Africa, African country, which is 54. And I've gone to all African Union countries, which is 55, if you include the disputed area of Western Sahara. And in my own count now, and any other count, I've been to all 60 African countries. Because it's actually 60. If you have to count the fact that Western, if you have to count the fact that Reunion and Mayotte are actually African countries, although they are quote unquote departments of France. I mean, how could they be? Because they're right next to Madagascar, if you will.
Yes.
And France is way up there. And if you look at St. Helena, which is on to the left-hand side, across from Namibia, if you will, to the extreme left, and that belongs to England. And England, if you know, it's way up there. And if you look at St. Canary Islands, which is 1,000 kilometers from Morocco, but it's, I think, 10,000 from Spain. So how could it be a Spanish country? So what I've done is I wanted to have a true experience of the continent in total. So those which others call Africa and those which are obviously Africa. So yeah, 60, all 60 countries. Matter of fact, last couple of days, I was in Somaliland, which is another disputed territory.
Yes.
But it's a disputed territory. But what a phenomenal country I was in. I couldn't believe how amazing the people are.
Yeah. And so you traveling to, you know, all 60, was that deliberate because you speak so much about the continent and even about the importance of, you know, when we speak about made for Africa, made in Africa, was that so, you know, when you speak about it, it's not conceptual. It's you've experienced it. You've been there.
Well, I mean, the one thing I know for certain is, and my one boss used to say, you can't build a brand from behind a desk. So certainly you can't champion Africa from behind your borders. So you need to cross your borders and try and understand how everybody lives, how everybody eats, how everybody speaks, how all those. And I mean, to me, there's a multiple aha moments on how I even got onto this. I remember I was in Switzerland. I used to go to Switzerland every year for 7 years to judge the Global Entrepreneurship Awards. We used to select out of 1,000 Ivy League and Oxbridge students, PhD students, we used to select the top three who've got solutions for the future from an entrepreneurial perspective. I used to do that every year. And on one time, there was a lady who was part of the Communist Party from China, and she was sitting there and she was being interviewed. I think it was Stephen Shakur from BBC, and she was interviewing him and allowed him to speak, and then allow her to speak, and then some young man in the group put up his hand, some young PhD boy, and says, "Oh, Miss, I forget it, Fung Ying, I think, Madame Fung Ying, I think it's his name, Fung somebody," and says to me, "You are sitting there and talking so wonderful about China, this, China, that, but your country has been destroying Tibet. You've denied them their interests and all those." Do you know she allowed this man to express himself? She didn't disrupt him. As soon as the boy finished, she said to him, "Have you been to Tibet?" And the boy said, "No." And she says, "How do you speak with such confidence about the country of my mother's birth?" She says, "Do you think I'd be sitting here destroying my own mother's country?" And she says, "Oh, young man, you're still young enough. I want to give advice. Never speak about any country without evidence and without experience of the country, of the real life of the people in those countries." Mm. And I said, "You know, I'm never going to talk about anybody's country, because, you know, as a South African, for example, we always talk about South Africa and Africa, if you will, because we've always sort of excluded ourselves on the basis of we're exceptional, we're different and all those type of things. But we've got to learn that there are many, many bonds which bind us." The one other interesting experience was I went to a meeting with KK Park, who was then the chief executive for Samsung for Africa and Middle East. I think he was from Korea. And I had coffee with him. I was writing an article more than a decade ago. I was writing an article on brands in the continent for the 50th anniversary of the African Union. And I said to him, KK, why are you so successful in the continent? I said, pretty much there's a Samsung in every country. And he says to me, "Oh, but Tebe, that's because we understand the countries." He said, "Even me, as a Korean citizen, I've been to every country in the continent except Swaziland." And I said, "You've been to every country?" He says, "Yes." He says, "How else do you think we are going to learn how to respond to the needs of the continent? How are we going to create the products that speak to who they are? How are we going to tell the stories of our brands and theirs and how our brands meet their needs?" He says, "That's how we got to be able to deliver on our goals in the continent." And I, at that stage, I think I'd been to 15 countries or so. And I said, I called my friend Omar in London, who's Tunisian. I said, "Oh, I've just met a proper African and he's Korean. And you and I claim to be African. We've never been to all these countries." Mm. I said, "Omar, we can't do this. We cannot sit around and claim we're Africans when we actually don't have a perspective of an African country other than South Africa or Tunisia in your instance." I said, "We need to get on the journey, my friend, because we don't want to be, as Trevor Stillman says the other night, says we don't want to be ghostwriters of the African story. Says we want to be real authors of the story of the continent." Yeah. And the only way we can it authentically is by being in the countries, knowing the people, knowing the conditions, knowing their needs, but most importantly, understanding their vision.
Mm-hmm. You are still on your 702 Weekend Breakfast with me, Gorgs and Mhlongo. We are still in our profile interview, speaking to marketing and branding expert, founder of Brand Leadership Group. He was recently conferred with an honorary doctorate by the University of Johannesburg. Dr. Tebe Ikalefeng joins us on the line from Addis Ababa this morning. Dr. Ikalefeng, so a couple of weeks ago, we saw you receiving your honorary doctorate. Firstly, congratulations. And what has that experience been like now that you are Dr. Ikalefeng?
Well, I'm still Tebe Ikalefeng, right? I think it was incredibly surreal. It was surreal because I never imagined an 18 and a half year old Tebe coming from Kimberley to Johannesburg, dropping out at Wits to go study in the US and then coming back and doing all the things that I've done. It was never part of the quote unquote plan of action, if you will. And even when I look at my life in the recent 20 years or so, I've never ever shaped around my life around awards and all those things. That's why I don't even enter corporate awards generally. There's one or two that my team would have entered, but I never ever shaped my life around awards, because I've always thought and I've always said to myself, when it comes to the work we do, the greatest award is a client achieving their results. And when it comes to what I do, the greatest award is something that I guess L. Ron Hubbard once said. It says at the end of our lives, we're going to be asked two questions. The first question we're going to be asked is, did you do the things you were meant to do on this earth? Mm-hmm. And secondly, did you knew you think your life was worth living? So I've always been sort of my mantra of how I do things. And I said to myself, make a difference, do something. So when that happened, to answer your question, and remember how it happened, was actually incredibly surreal as well. Because on the 12th of October, 2023, I received a letter from the University of Johannesburg advising me that the Senate and the Council have, through their multiple processes, have resolved to honor me with an honorary doctorate for my contributions to society. Mm-hmm. And then on the 13th of October, which is exact next day, I received a similar letter from the University of South Africa, also expressing the same thing. It was incredible coincidence, if you will. I said the two probably major universities in the country, UNISA being the biggest, was over 400,000, and UJ 60,000 students, and are both arriving at the same decision independently, having gone through different processes. It was humbling. It was surreal. And it was, I guess, a notice or a comment back to what I said about L. Ron Hubbard, who said, maybe you are doing the things you're supposed to do. Mm. And maybe when your time is done from this earth and everybody looks back, they will probably say, for the time that we gave you, you did what you could do, and it was worth, and your life was worth something. So in that way, it's a humbling moment. And in that way, it's an endorsement to say the things that you've been doing, you're on track. Just keep stepping.
Which was going to be my question. So to answer that, you know, the question that you ask yourself, or that guiding principle of, did you do the things you were meant to do or that you needed to do with your time? Do you felt that you have done that? Certainly, I think the University of Johannesburg, the University of South Africa seems to think that. The various awards that you've been given over the years seem to think that. But do you think that?
No. I've always, and everybody who knows me, and my friend from creche, my first year at school at the age of four, I spoke to him recently. He's an advocate in Johannesburg, Papu Manyaman. And I said to him, and he's been my friend from that day throughout school. And then we had our paths parted when we went to varsity. And I said to him, Pops, you know, I'm so hectic. I'm doing this, you know, I'm traveling, I'm advising this, I'm judging this, I'm doing this. I said, I'm so busy. And he says to me, but that's how you've always been your whole life. I said, what do you mean? He says, that's exactly who you were at creche. That's exactly who you were at primary and high school. And when I reflect and I look at, oh my goodness, he may be right. Because I remember in my high school years, I was doing violin, I was doing piano, I was in chess, I was in choir, I was in drama, I was in athletics, and I was still the top student for pretty much the rest of my school life. Mm. And I said, you're right, Pops. Maybe I should not put so much pressure on myself and just keep doing what I'm doing, because it's part of my mojo, it's what I do. People always say to me now, they say to me, we don't understand. You've got an office in Joburg, an office in Kenya. You are working here, there, you are traveling. You are, today we see you judging this. I said, oh, I'm just doing myself. I don't think about it. Because I think if you're following your heart, if you're following your passions, and you are in many ways living your purpose, you don't have to question yourselves, and everything will happen that needs to happen for you and through you. So I don't think I have, to answer your question, did I do the things I was meant to do? I think the fact that I don't feel as the African American gospel song goes, I don't feel no ways tired. It means I'm actually on a journey which I'm meant to be. Mm. And I know that because I don't measure it with money. I don't measure it with titles and all those things. Even when they do happen, they happen just as a consequence, but not as a goal.
I thought it was quite interesting, part of the thing you said in your keynote when you received your doctorate, and part of it was, our job is to produce and consume made in Africa. If Africa is truly going to become independent, free, integrated and prosperous, made in Africa must become our most serious agenda. Only Africa can serve Africa. And what does that mean, made in Africa? It almost makes me think of, I'm trying to remember which leader that said, you know, for the nation to thrive, for the nation to be prosperous, the tribe must die. And here it almost sounds as if for the continent to be prosperous, we need to let go of this idea of, or which we cling quite closely to, of the nation states, that we are South Africa and we are not like Zimbabwe or Ghana or Ethiopia, etc. And so I'm quite interested in this idea of made in Africa and what that means, what that looks like.
I'm going to answer it in a couple of ways. Ali Mazrui, who's a Tanzanian-Kenyan academic, is late now, passed a few years ago. He said something profound. He said, Africa produces what it doesn't consume and consumes what it doesn't produce. And I know that for a fact. Because when you looked at our trade, if you look at our level of indebtedness, over $1.8 trillion in debts for the continent, if you look at the study that I do, Brand Africa 100, for the last 15 years, only 15% of the brands that Africans admire are made in Africa. If you look at the continent, we probably one of the biggest recipient of aid. So in many ways, the continent is not independent. We are so dependent on the external for our sustainability. And until we reach a point where we can feed ourselves, where we can clothe ourselves, where we can crown ourselves, we will never ever be truly independent. Now, and why is Made in Africa so important? Made in Africa is important for a couple of reasons. If you think about England, think about the United Kingdom, you think about tradition and you think about them as the royal tradition or the traditional brand. If you think about France, you think about being the sexy and the fashion and the cologne brand. If you think about Germany, you think about the efficiency and German engineering. You think about Japan, you think about precision. Think about America, think about enterprise. So having said just those few examples, you already begin to see how important the brands that we create help to shape the narratives of the countries that we are part of. Because what helps us say Germany is efficient? And it's because they've got Siemens, they've got Porsche, they've got Mercedes. What do you think America is entrepreneurial? Because all the entrepreneurial ideas we think of, probably 8 of the top 10 apps that we cannot live without, from Instagram to Twitter and all the, well, Twitter is not American, but many of Facebook and all those are not it in America. And the products that we cannot live without, Microsoft, all those come from America. Even the bad ones like McDonald's and Coca-Cola, we cannot live without, and because it's the entrepreneurial spirit of America. So when we begin to create Made in Africa brands, we'll in many ways be contributing towards the positioning of our countries and of our continent. If you look at, let's just look at a micro level in the African perspective. On the micro level, if you look at South Africa, for example, when South Africa was a pariah state and was locked off from the rest of the world, what did the Afrikaners do? The Afrikaners learned that they are going to need to create the brands and the products which are going to help to shape the narrative of them as independent. That's why they created many of the brands that you see, from the Anglos to the De Beers to the Sasols to all those. And that's why they are not so. When you look at the continental positioning, people are saying, "Oh, the most industrialized country in the continent," but we it's as Black South Africa in the last 30 years have not necessarily contributed much to that. We inherited that from apartheid South Africa. So what we need to do, we need to fast track a Made in Africa or Made in South Africa, Made in Nigeria, Made in Rwanda products, because those will help to contribute towards shaping the narrative of the countries and collectively of the continent. Besides, when we are opening up the borders with AFCFTA, Africa Free Trade Continental Agreement, which we agreed to in 2018 in Rwanda, when we open up the borders, which goods are going to flow through that? We need to ensure that the goods that are flowing through that are made in Africa. Mm-hmm. And there's no problem, by the way, with international brands or international products, international services. But what you need to learn is to learn from China, for example, when brands like the Amazons and all those wanted to come in. The Chinese said, hell no, we're going to close the borders a little bit so that we can build our own Alibabas. And when the Alibabas were strong, they opened up the borders and it says, you can come and compete with us now on equal footing. And when they tried to compete, they couldn't keep up because the Chinese had built very strong domestic brands. And that's why now they are beginning to dominate in the world, no longer with cheap labor, but now with incredibly affordable and accessible products. So that's why Made in Africa is so urgent. It's urgent because it is our ultimate ultimate savior if we come into creating truly independent, integrated, and prosperous Africa.
How much of that also rests on this idea of, I mean, Africa is a huge continent. I mean, you were just saying that it's over 50 countries. If you count, you know, some of the disputed territories, it can even go up to 60, with hundreds, thousands of languages, over a billion people. How do you create, and I guess this comes back to where we started this conversation, how do you create a cohesive, I guess, brand for an area that big, that diverse? How do you get buy-in? Because that's, you can create the brand, but then you also need buy-in. How do you get, for instance, South Africa? And earlier you mentioned, you know, one of our big challenges is this kind of exceptionalism, this idea that we thought we were special. There's us and then there's Africa. How do you create a brand and then get buy-in for it? Or maybe is this the thing that you're still going to figure out and this is how you retire a multi-billionaire?
No, I think we need to go back to the foundation, to the beginning stages. So on the 24th of May 1963, that's the eve of the formation of the African Union, of Organization African Union.
Mm-hmm.
Kwame Nkrumah sat with the 32 presidents who were part of that collective that started the AU, what we now call the AU. And one of the things that he laid out there, he laid a 5-point manifesto for what the continent needs. And, you know, he spoke then already about the need for a common defense system, the need for common communication, the need for a common currency, the need for a common citizenship, and all those. And do you realize, if you look at back now, we have yet to accomplish those. But what he was doing there was laying a foundation and a vision for the continent. What we lack as a continent and as a country is a couple of things. It's one, a clear vision of what does success look like for South Africa? Mm-hmm. What does success look like for Africa? Once we have defined that, then we can do the second most important part and say, and say to the common citizenry, whether it's a country or collectively, do you believe in this? If you believe in this, can you see the evidence of us delivering on it? Because there needs to be evidence as well. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that there is not much evidence of us delivering on any of these visions that we come up with. And as a result, you lack the ability to be able to bring people along. You know, Mbeki said in 1990, the former president Mbeki said in 1998 at the United Nations University in Japan. He said, out of this continent, out of a continent that is peaceful, a continent with no wars and all those, must come evidence of a continent that is working. And he says that evidence is going to be through the products, through the enterprise, through the arts, and through all those. So we are long ways from achieving what he means, what he envisioned, because as a country and collective, we are still fighting the politics, and the politics seem to be the greater product rather than the products that we can create to put on the tables of citizens.
Yeah.
Remember, citizens don't want to become beggars. We can't be a country, for example, South Africa, where in effect more than 60% of the country is unemployed, in effect, where a country where 7% only pays tax and 93% depends on that tax. So it is a major challenge, because as a country, if I think in the micro level, as a country, we've created a country of dependence than a country of dependables. Are you with me? Because what I think we need to do as a country is we need to walk the talk. We talk about industrialization, but I'm not even sure if we understand what industrialization means. Mm. Because we've been talking about as a continent from 1963 about we need to industrialize. Because industrialize means we need to create the jobs, we need to create the brands, or if you will, the brands will create the brands will create the industries, the industry will create the jobs will create the tax funds, and the tax funds will help to pay the public goods. So the citizens will contribute to creating a better South African, better continent, but we need to create an enabling environment for them. And most importantly, we need to show them an example of what success looks like for South Africa, for the rest of the continent. We have failed dismally as a continent to do that. Although there are pockets of excellence in various places, but the politics have always been the biggest stumbling block in the development of the continent.
And I mean, I think we even see some of the failures being ongoing, but do you remain optimistic about the potential for that idea? I mean, there are many challenges. We just need to look at our own country. Do you remain optimistic, or is it not a matter of optimism? It's just simply a matter of there is no future without this, I guess, this big idea of Made in Africa. We simply need it. It's a non-negotiable, whether you feel optimistic or not about it. It is simply an imperative.
But it's an imperative, and of course I'm optimistic. The reason I have to remain optimistic, because if I despair, it means that even I will die. And I will die with my dreams and my hopes for the continent, and everybody else will as well. And we will all go into the streets and become beggars, and we'll all depend on the aid. And none of us want to be a continent of dependence. As I said, we want to be a continent of dependables, the people that you can depend on. And we're only going to do that if we do what Mother Teresa, I think, is the one who said once, start with what you have where you are, to make a difference. So every single one of us can create that difference where we are. Whether it's you in broadcasting, being careful about the narratives, the stories that you tell, how, what, and understanding the impact of those. Whether it's somebody in creating a product and service and asking, what do those do? How do they contribute to job creation? How do they contribute towards the dignity? How do they contribute towards ensuring that the continent or the country is independent? Every single one of us has got an opportunity to create the Africa that we want. As somebody once said, we are the ones that we've been waiting for.
Just to wrap up our conversation, Dr. Philemon Mahunda in Midstream says, congratulations, Dr. Tebe Kalifeng. Your conviction and energy are absolutely inspiring. Keep up the good work. Shando Gandaba says, Dr. Tebe, he's one of the continent's citizens. He is amazing. And I must thank you very much for making time for us this morning. Thank you so much, Doctor.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day. And let us do what a good friend of mine once said. And remember that what's going to get us going in the right direction is to remember that the rest of the world has got a past, but we have a future and we are part of the architects of that future.
That's Dr. Tebe Ekalefeng, marketing and branding expert and founder of Brand Leadership Group, joining us this morning as our profile guest.